in the salty ocean, off where the waves roll free. The sparkling water rises, then crashes to the sea. Out amongst the breakers, you'll have no need to fear. It's true, it's the blue frontier.
Welcome to the season 6 finale of Rising Tide, the Ocean Podcast. David, Vicky, and Natasha are all out this week, so Nick Paz and I decided to take over and revisit a conversation we had with Vince Ewan during Coastal Cleanup Day. Before we dive into our conversation, no episode would be complete without some blue news you can use.
For our end of the year Rising Tide Ocean Podcast listeners, here's some bipolar Arctic and Antarctic blue news you can use. Well, funding has been cut to the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. NOAA still manages to turn out some good science, including its 2025 Arctic report card. With the Arctic warming 3 to 4 times faster than the global average, the last year has seen the warmest water temperatures in Alaska's ocean ever recorded. Also the most rain, including the wettest spring. Also record low winter sea ice. Similar warming is taking place in Antarctica, where I was reporting on climate change some 25 years ago. I got there aboard the Nathaniel Palmer, the only U.S. research vessel to operate in the Southern Ocean around Antarctica. It's been doing so since 1992, but won't be in 2026, because the Trump administration has cut its funding from the National Science Foundation budget. While China, Chile, Russia, Canada, and other nations are expanding their scientific studies at the poles, the administration continues defunding basic science, including climate and medical science. If that makes no sense to you, I guess that makes you sensible. And that's today's blue news you can use.
When we talk about ocean pollution, it's easy to picture distant gyres or plastic washing up on far-off shores. So much of what ends up in the sea begins much closer to home, on our sidewalks, in our storm drains, and along the streets we walk every day. In this episode, we trace that path from city curb to coastline with someone who decided to do something about it. Vince Ewan is the founder of Refuse Refuse in San Francisco, a grassroots cleanup effort that started during the pandemic as a simple way to get outside with his daughters and quickly grew into a powerful community movement. Together, we talk about how urban litter fuels ocean pollution, why consistency matters, and how local action can ripple outward into policy change. This conversation focuses on trash, but it's really about care, community, and what happens when people choose to show up for the places they live.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. Okay. Welcome back to the Rising Tide, the Ocean Podcast, where we explore stories of people creating change from the shorelines to the streets. Today, we're talking trash, literally, and how picking it up can help protect our oceans. Our guest is Vincent Ewan, founder of Refuse Refuse San Francisco, an organization leading the charge to clean up our city and keep debris out of our waterways.
I actually have a minor correction. It's Refuse Refuse, but that's okay. It's
a common. There's no right way to say it. So,
all right. So yes, we are here with Vincent Ewan of Refuse Refuse. Vince, can you give us a quick background on who you are and how you started Refuse Refuse?
Yeah. So I'm Vince Ewan, founder of Refuse Refuse. This really came about out of self-preservation during the pandemic. I was stuck at home with my two young daughters. They're 6 and 4 at the time and just driving me absolutely crazy. So just as an activity to get outdoors, socially distance, I bought a couple of grabbers and we started cleaning in our neighborhood in the inner Richmond. And, you know, I've been in San Francisco now 20 years. And I think a lot of us kind of become numb to how much litter and waste and pollution that's out there. And when you start picking it up one by one, you realize, you know, how legit dirty San Francisco is. But what I also didn't expect was how well that manual cleaning just a couple times a week, our neighborhood looked so much better. So then, you know, it got me thinking like, well, if more people would engage in this activity, we could actually keep the environment a lot cleaner here in the city. So
love it.
Yeah.
What was your first connection to the ocean?
Well, I grew up in Pasadena, so not very close to the ocean, but my parents had a place in Carpinteria, just south of Santa Barbara. So as a kid, I would always be at the ocean, like boogie boarding or just like playing in the ocean. So I think I grew up really around the water. And then I went to school at UC Santa Barbara, and I've actually never lived, that far from the coast, San Diego and San Francisco. I think in San Francisco, a lot of people forget that we actually have a beach here. But those of us that are out here know that there is still a really big beach and surf culture. And so I think a lot of people do understand the importance of keeping the environment clean. So I've thankfully, being in California, kind of always had that kind of connection with the beach and the ocean and coastline. Yeah.
That's amazing. So you mentioned when you got started, you noticed there's a lot of trash in the area, and that beautifying the area on kind of a more regular basis helped. Was there a specific moment when you realized I need to do something about all the trash in the area?
I think it's just, no, I mean, it wasn't like a aha moment for me. I think it just kind of fell into place. And then really also seeing that there's other people who were doing this work, but not in kind of a organized way, like kind of onesie twosie people doing it on their own. So my background is sales and marketing. So that's where I came up with this brand, Refuse Refuse, and just something that people could stand behind and feel like they're more part of a collective than just individuals on their own. So through that, I think it has helped, just people rally behind a concerted effort. And, but it's no one person can do it alone. It's been amazing to see the community come together to organize the cleanups and for people to come and attend them. But there's still so much room for more. There's still so many people who haven't even heard about this or participated that I think would. And, I always say we come for the trash, but we stay for the community. One of the things that I didn't realize was how much of the community building and just meeting people in the neighborhood has come about through this simple act of cleaning up. But me and Holden have become good friends just through this effort. And I have countless other examples of that as well. So, yeah.
Nice. Can you talk about how your relationship with the ocean and the coastlines has shaped your commitment to cleaning up the urban environments?
Yeah, because I think a lot of people are excited about beach cleanup. So, most people at least have a mindset of yes, we definitely need to keep the waterways clean, the beaches clean. But I think a lot of people don't realize that a lot of that pollution comes from our own waste within the cities and the neighborhoods that make its way through here directly or through the storm drains. And so the message is also just clean up in front of your own home, in the neighborhoods, because that's impacting the waterways, the bay, and the ocean by making sure that pollution doesn't get out in there. So that is the message, take care of home base. That helps protect the ocean as well. Yeah.
Love it. So a lot of people, I think, as you were just mentioning, think that pollution just starts at beaches and boats, where it's whether it's things dumping off of boats, but much of it begins in our streets. How does litter in San Francisco end up impacting the ocean?
Yeah, I mean, again, we're surrounded by water on three sides. So especially in San Francisco, we have an extra responsibility to keep it clean. Thankfully, we do have some good filtration systems and water treatment systems, but especially during those big storms, it just overflows that capacity. And so I know a lot of people who swim in the bay or surf in the waters don't go out there after the big storms because they literally see that pollution floating around out there. So I think if more people kind of understand that pollution inland makes its way out to the water, that they'll be more conscious about the waste they produce and also the litter that's out there. Yeah.
Do you think people fully understand the land to sea connection?
I don't, maybe some people don't. I think the coastal communities do a little bit more, but, especially San Francisco being a very transient place, a lot of people come from different parts of the country and they may not realize how things are set up or how that pollution makes its way into the bay and the ocean. So, education, awareness has always got to be top of mind for us, especially because there's always new people coming into our coastal city here in San Francisco.
Oh, I'll take the next one. Sure. So just seeing the response here, it's been really amazing to see this. And you've really just built an incredible community here around Refuse Refuse. What strategies have worked best to get everyday people involved, especially those who might feel like one person can't make a difference?
Right. Yeah, again, it's kind of understanding that it's a collective that, for example, this weekend, we have 30 separate cleanups, not because it's Coastal Cleanup Day. It's just that's what we do here in San Francisco. So it's creating the culture around just being consistent and doing the work. You can say all you want about, oh, we want to protect the ocean, but the actions are what speak. And so, you know, every week we got 400, 500 people coming out, 20 to 30 cleanups per week. But there's so much room for more. But we just want to give people the opportunity and then spread that awareness. And hopefully more people will adopt the lifestyle of joining cleanups and just other everyday things that they can do on their own to reduce their waste. You know, cleaning up is kind of treating the symptom. I mean, it's important and it is impact, but a lot of impact is just how do we reduce the amount of waste that we're producing to begin with? And that's from everyday habits of way people consume things, purchase things. And, you know, we also put pressure on consumer packaged good companies and legislators to do things that will reduce that amount of waste or encourage more reusable materials than this, especially those single use plastics. Cigarette butts, of course, is a huge concern of ours. It's the number one most littered item. And even though they're super small, they have toxins and plastics, and that's what gets into the storm drains and pollutes the waterways. You know?
We'll do the next one, Nick.
Oh, sure. Yeah. okay. Regarding, I guess, momentum and keeping the organization going. Do you want to?
Let's do motivated.
You want to motivate it? Okay.
Sure. Okay. How do you keep? How do you keep volunteers motivated when the problem of pollution can feel so overwhelming?
Yeah, I mean, at least for me personally, I don't know. I think everybody has their own motivations and their own, you know, like stick it with itness. For me, it's just the act, right? I don't focus, although we are focused on results, I focus less on the results than actually just doing the work, because that's really what you can control. And so I think if people just focus on what they have the ability to do, then you can just stick with it and be kind of a little bit more stoic about, you know, the effort, because I agree, it can be very daunting to be like, I really can't affect change. I'm a little bit powerless. And yeah, individually we are, but collectively it's amazing to see. And so I hope events like this show people like you're not the only one who cares. Like there's hundreds of people who will come out on a Saturday morning to come clean up the litter, and you're not alone. And then collectively, when you see all that litter that we've collected and removed from the environment, then people really see that one-to-one relationship of like how they're able to contribute to this larger effort. Right?
Awesome. I'll take the next question.
Go ahead.
Right. Just regarding kind of treating the symptom and looking beyond at, you know, just the cleanups themselves, which are amazing, by the way, what policies or systemic changes would make the biggest difference in reducing non-point source waste?
Yeah.
At the source.
There's probably many things. I mean, for me personally, I'll start with cigarette butts. Again, it's like if you've ever joined a cleanup, you're like, wow, like where did all these smokers come from? You don't see them smoking, but obviously it's there. And it's just, you know, part of the habit. You know, there are many responsible smokers who will take that extra step and throw it away. But there's many people, it's just part of the feedback loop. You know, it's like you smoke it, then you just throw it on the ground and you just, who knows? But it's like, and so that's like a huge focus on it. So the legislative stuff that we're pushing for is mainly about banning the sale of filtered tobacco products, just because it's like, yeah, consumers just are not behaving correctly. We have to do something about it. And so, you know, places like I think Beverly Hills and Manhattan Beach have passed ordinances. Santa Cruz County has passed an ordinance to do that. Baltimore is also trying their own. Here in San Francisco, we're trying to join that fight as well, because, you know, just we can't have these things out there. They're just super toxic. They're just ubiquitous. And then the other side is just, how do we reduce single-use items, especially single-use plastic items? So that's really on pushing producer responsibility onto, you know, the consumer packaged good companies to find materials that are either more reusable, less packaging, more recyclable. And so those are kind of more upstream things that we should be focusing on.
Thank you. Awesome.
So I have heard your trash talk a number of times. I think one of the things that I've really taken away from it is that if you are out cleaning up an area or working in an area on a monthly basis, then the impact is 25%. Like you'll see a 25% reduction in trash if you go out and clean up the same area all the time. But then if you up that to, say, a weekly basis, it increases to 75% reduction in trash or the impact is that. And I've seen that at the battery project that we've started working on, but then also from a trash pickup perspective. Are there, what are the other like surprising things that people have learned when after you have given a trash talk, or like what are the things that people are like taking away from that trash talk outside of my 75%?
No, that data is like, it's like, it is a math problem, right? A lot of people are like, well, it's too much. We're never going to get it clean. And it's like, you know, that's not, I mean, yes, the litter will always come back. There's always, you know, so much that will accumulate because we're just the way that we have our consumption habits, the way that we set up the system with all this packaging and all these waste materials, but you never let it accumulate past a certain point if you're out there regularly. And so I think that's the message, like people can visually see that if you're going out weekly, you change the landscape. And so I think that will keep people motivated to keep it and understand that they are making an impact. So it is that consistency. Other information that people I think find interesting is that most of the litter isn't purposely littered. You know, a lot of people think like, oh, it's people just throwing things on the ground and homeless and people rummaging through and scattering, which does add to it. But the majority of trash is just our own residential waste that, because we're in such a dense place with a lot of wind, we're actually one of the top 10 windiest major cities out there. That actually scatters most of the trash, even though they've done the right action of putting the trash in the trash cans, the wind will just blow it out. And on Recology pickup days, things fall out, just accidentally falling out of people's hands. So I think a lot of people are surprised. It's like, oh, it's not actually just people littering. It's just things that just by nature fall out. And so I think that is. Another one is west sides of streets in the city have more trash than the east sides of the street.
Interesting.
It's counterintuitive because the wind comes from the ocean, but the way that our buildings are set up, it creates this kind of swirling eddying pattern. So the leaves and trash will just swirl back to the west side of the street. So I've always wanted to take a survey of our volunteers that are regulars and see how many of them live on a west side versus east side. And I think it's probably most west siders because they're the ones who see all the trash coming to their driveway in the front of their homes. So, yeah. It's another little fun fact.
What is Rising Tide? Rising Tide is Blue Frontier's bi-weekly half-hour show that features a diversity of ocean voices from the famous to the fascinating. Deep sea explorers to whale wranglers, Arctic residents to climate justice warriors. With public broadcasting under attack, Blue Frontier offers Rising Tide and all associated content for free to community and public radio stations across the nation. We need your support to keep producing our salty, in-depth conversations. A tax-deductible donation at bluefront.org will help us keep getting the word out about our awesome blue planet. And now, back to the show.
All right, and we're back here. We're taking over for David and Vicky on this episode of Rising Tide, the podcast. We're here with Vince Ewan again. And so let's see, now we are going to talk a little bit about Coastal Cleanup Day and future vision. Vince, are you ready for this?
Yeah, I am.
All right. Okay, why do you feel, outside of just my impact or my pushing for Coastal Cleanup Day, why do you feel Coastal Cleanup Day is so important, and how is Refuse Refuse making it unique for San Francisco?
Yeah, I think it's a great campaign because it just creates that awareness. You know, again, a lot of people maybe forget that a lot of this pollution impacts the coast and the waterways. So to have this campaign that's been going for 41 years now and just grown over the years is like incredible. And we're just playing our small part of it and our little piece of the coast that we protect. And so hopefully that encourages other communities to also step up and do this. So it's been amazing. And like, it's a call to action. We had over 200 people here, which is more than our normal, which I already think is incredible. Kind of like 30, 40 volunteers we get every week out here, plus the corporate groups, plus the school groups to come out. But to have this kind of awareness, and maybe some of the people here, this is the first time they've done a cleanup and they tried it and they're like, wow, this is easy. It feels good. And maybe they're inspired to do more cleanups and come back. Because again, one time is great, but it's that stewardship that every day, every week, and that's kind of the mindset and the lifestyle that we're trying to encourage. So Coastal Cleanup Day has done a great job creating that awareness and bringing more people who may not have originally thought about it to come join the efforts.
Right. It really takes a village to make this all happen. And I just wanted to ask, so you mentioned kind of this organization growing and the volunteers are increasing every time.
Yeah.
What does success look like for you, not just for this event, but for the next 5 to 10 years?
Just having more people participate and like adopt this in their lifestyle. I mean, it is really difficult because, you know, our lives are very busy. There's a lot of responsibilities we have. And in the Bay Area, especially, there's so many awesome things to do with your leisure time. How do we compete for that? But I hope that people don't think it's an either or, you know, it's an and. You can also join these volunteer cleanup events, and it makes a richer experience for, you know, our lives here in the Bay Area. And so I hope people will, you know, include this into their habits as well. And, you know, again, no one can do it alone. You can't be here all the time, but if, you know, the person who didn't do it starts doing it and does it once a year, wow, that's a huge impact. If that person who's doing it once a year does it twice a year, if that person who's doing it, you know, regularly gets a friend to come, that's how we increase the impact. And so we're still, you know, early stages. I always say it's like there's so many people who have never even heard of these efforts, let alone tried one. So we just got to keep consistent, keep the message out there, keep promoting it, keep inviting people to join us, and then making it easy. So events like this are great because there's awareness. And then since we have built up these this kind of playbook for running these cleanups, they're very turnkey, and people, I think, understand how easy it is to get involved. You know,
it's amazing. You want to take it away, Holden?
Yeah, I'll take it. So what has leading this movement taught you about community responsibility and, dare I say, in these tumultuous times, hope?
Yeah. It's been incredible because, you know, prior to this effort of Refuse Refuse, I didn't really volunteer regularly. It just wasn't a habit. It wasn't something I really grew up with. Thankfully, there are a lot of people who have found their way to that. But I think majority of people are how I was, which is like, they understand it's a good thing, but they just don't find a way in their busy lives to make it a part of their lifestyle. But now that I look back, it's like, you know what? I did have the time. I could have made time. So I'm just making up for lost time and encouraging other people to find ways to incorporate this into their day-to-day habits. So for me, it's just, you know, I'm not judging other people, and I don't think you're a bad person if you don't volunteer. But again, it's a richer experience if you do. And like you said, that community building, it's not something that I even ever thought of, but it's almost more important than some of the actions that we're actually taking, is that, wow, you're coming together for common cause. It's something bigger than yourselves. It's not about yourself. And so that creates a camaraderie. And then like all these people that I've met through these cleanups has been amazing. And it's just like, again, much, much richer experience, especially in a place like San Francisco, that there's just so many people around. It's easy to be caught up and be a stranger to everyone, and harder to, like, you know, really know your neighbors and make acquaintances. So it does take, I think, more intentional activities like this to like build that community.
Yeah, and I found very much in the work that we've done together, whether it's being outside on a day like today, or even in the, like, whether it's working weekly at the Battery Project with the National Park Services, no matter how bad a morning I'm having or how bad I feel, getting up, being outside, talking to people, doing, like, picking up trash, doing the work after 2 hours, like, I'm tired, but then I'm also like energized and I feel good. So like doing these things like does take an effort, but it also like reinvigorates. And it's like, okay, well, we have to do another one of these. And pulling something together is difficult and turnkey, but it was like, after it's like, all right, what are we doing next? Like, what's next thing?
Exactly.
And so, to that end, if you could ask every listener to take one small action, what would that be?
Yeah, I just, again, find time to volunteer, whatever that your passion is. Ours is obviously cleaning and keeping the coast clean. And then just, you know, find ways, you know, individual habits. Like, for example, one that we've done, we switched to dryer sheets instead of, you know, the old school plastic. It's like one small thing, but, you know, you look back and like, how much plastic did we use before? Yeah. And now at least we have a recyclable paper box that these little dryer sheets come in. And so it's a really small thing, but it's, you know, it's an impact. And there's a private service called Ridwell. Mm-hmm. So we've subscribed to Ridwell so we can, especially the plastic film that we produce, it's mind-boggling how much plastic film we produce on a weekly basis, and when we're saving it. And now someone has created a mechanism for us to reuse that. I think they sell it to Trex Decking, and they make, you know, decking out of these films. That's amazing. Now. So it's like, yeah, we need more of these kind of pathways, and more people be aware, and more people adopting those habits to help us. And every bit helps. I really believe that.
That's amazing. Thanks. Thanks so much for your time. And how can people get involved? How people, I guess, reach out and start getting involved with Refuse Refuse?
Yeah, best way to start to go to the website, refuserefusesf.org. So it's the word refuse twice and sf like San Francisco.org. And you can find more information about our campaign. If you click cleanups, you can see all the upcoming cleanups that we have in San Francisco. Again, we have 20 to 30 a week to join. And you just show up. We hand out the tools, you go clean, and a lot of them have free food and drink afterwards. You can meet neighbors and be part of the community. And, you know, no one who ever did a cleanup looked back and said, I shouldn't have done that. Like, they're always like, this was great. I want to do it again. So, yeah, and just stay consistent. Keep coming out.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Vince.
What I love about this conversation is how grounded it is. Vince reminds us that you don't need permission, funding, or even a plan to make a difference. Sometimes it starts with a walk, a trash bag, and the decision to care, and then it can grow from there. Refuse Refuse shows us that cleaning up our cities isn't just about removing waste. It's about reconnecting people to place, to one another, and to the ocean systems we're all a part of, whether we live on the coast or miles inland. Hopefully, this episode resonated with you and inspires you to look a little closer at your own neighborhood and consider how small, consistent actions can add up to meaningful change. As we move through the holiday and look ahead to the new year, the entire Rising Tide crew hopes you carry that spirit of care with you toward your community, environment, and one another. Thank you for joining us on Rising Tide, the Ocean Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and leave us a review or share with your friends and other ocean lovers. Follow us on Instagram and visit bluefront.org for more updates and additional resources. Be sure to join us next year as we highlight more voices of the ocean and dive into more riveting tales from ocean scientists, artists, activists, and more. You won't want to miss a thing. Rising Tide is a production of Blue Frontier, usually co-hosted by David Helvarg and Vicky Nichols Goldstein of the Inland Ocean Coalition, with production support from Holden Hardcastle of Fluid Studios, Natasha Benjamin, Nick Paz, and editing services provided by Charles Landon of Studio Cape May. Thanks for listening, and until next year, stay hopeful and stay salty.
Off in the salty ocean, off where the waves roll free, the sparkling water rises, then crashes to the sea. Out amongst the breakers, you'll have no need to fear. It's true, it's the Blue Frontier. Tear. Off in the salty ocean, off to the Blue Frontier.
Sparky, come here, buddy. Sparky! There you are, good boy, Sparky!